Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. You know what I've been thinking about?
What, girl?
I have been thinking about how much fun I have every Wednesday morning on 13ABC's The 9.
Wow, I've been thinking about how much fun I have watching it.
Oh my gosh, queen. I love my favorite viewer. No, it's been a lot of fun to have that medium. Obviously, working in a job now that's not directly related to journalism, it's been a lot of fun for me to be able to go into The 9 and work with so many cool people who I've known for so long and just be able to have that outlet to kind of advertise what's going on with my company and then what's cool in Toledo.
Yeah.
But I think for me, the thing that makes it the most fun is The 9's producer, Sophia Walcher.
Oh my gosh. Is she in the studio?
Is she in the studio?
Dun, dun, dun.
It's me. What's up, Sophia?
Nothing much. I'm having a great time. I'm so happy to be in the stew.
I know. It feels weird for me to call upon you to come do something.
I know.
And it's, not for you to call upon me.
It. No, but in I like reverse. It. When you texted me, I was tickled pink, as some would say.
Well, we're so excited to have you in the studio today.
Yes,
and
thank
talking
you so
to
much
us
for being here.
All about your incredible life.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
You just have so many things that you are involved in with the community, and we love to see it. So before we get too ahead of ourselves, yes, give us a little bit of background on you. Run us through like your early years. Like, we're talking like the
absolutely
K through 12 vibes. Where were you
oh,
raised?
Oh, perfect. Yeah. I was born in Sylvania first, and then right before first grade, we moved to Perrysburg. Mm. And I spent, it was not intentional, my first through my senior year all in Perrysburg. And then we moved back to Sylvania. Don't know why they did that to me, but, you know, I guess they thought that I was too powerful or something. I don't know. But I was a yellow jacket for 12 years. I grew up, I did a lot of different things. I did theater, I did soccer, I did orchestra, speech and debate. I was the president of my environmental club.
Okay, overachieving.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you believe it, I never got most involved in high school. I went to somebody else. The one superlative I was like gunning for, and I didn't get it, but
dang,
it's whatever. I clearly don't think about it to this day.
You were robbed. You know what? We'll just do an on the come up superlative episode, and you can have our most involved.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Yeah, but I always was doing something. I was a very hyperactive kid. I was the kid who'd always climb a tree or climb a couch. Everybody was worried about me constantly. And then I just translated that into growing up as an adult and still trying to do a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I clearly can't keep still in every aspect of my
life. I was going to say, this is still true to you today.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about your like education and your schooling kind of after high school. What was next for you?
Yeah, after high school, I went to BGSU. Go Falcons. Talons
Go Falcons.
Up. Hashtag talons up. And I studied broadcast journalism. And at first I minored in theater, and then I took an intro to philosophy class and I said, whoa, hold on, thinking, this is great. So then I literally took that one class and I went to my academic advisor and I said, hey, this is really cool. I want to minor in this now. So I studied that throughout my 4 years. There was one single day that I was a media studies major because I had a really hard teacher my second semester. And then that made me add on an extra semester of school because I messed up my coursework. You had to take it certain semesters. So I had a fun semester where I did this thing at BG called Treehouse Troop, which was children's theater. I
oh,
did that
cool.
for a semester.
Fun.
Took an ice skating class, took a tap class. I did improv for all my 4 years. And then my senior year, I was acquainted with somebody who was a producer at a local TV station. And he said, hey, if you are interested in this, I would love to hit you up with an internship. And an internship turned into a job, and then a job turned into another job. So
wow.
Right. So that internship was with 13ABC.
Yeah, it was as the weekend morning producer.
Wow.
So my shift was midnight to 10 a.m. on Saturdays and
oh
Sundays.
My goodness.
So fun.
Yeah.
So fun.
It was really, my sleep schedule really enjoyed it because I can't sleep before something because if I get like nervous or excited, my energy, like I can't regulate that. So, and melatonin, just too much melatonin as a kid does
yeah,
not work.
Sure.
And I would just pull all-nighters every
real
weekend for 6 months.
No, wow. I did the WTOL internship, and when I was there, whenever I worked that morning shift, I would just go to work at the obscenely early hours of the day.
Yep.
I'd come home, sleep as long as I possibly could, and then just hang out and vibe and chill with my friends at night, and then go right into work again.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, I mean, not going to say it wasn't fun. I actually really liked that shift. I would sometimes fall asleep at the desk.
Of course.
Which, if for people who don't know about producing, a big part of the live show is that they're the ones timing the anchors, because you have to fit it in, you know, whether it's a half hour, an hour show, you have like break times that you have to hit. So falling asleep is not good. I like, it was more like a little flutter of the eye, a little Sleeping Beauty moment.
So
and I was
fair.
Like, oh, 10 seconds.
No, I'm certain that you have fallen victim to the, I'm going to go take a nap in my car on my break.
I had a coworker who said they fell asleep at a stop sign once.
Oh, no.
And somebody honking at them woke them up.
Oh, sweet.
So luckily that never happened to me.
Fair.
But I had many, there's a couch in our basement. I had many couch naps.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So walk us through a little bit of your day-to-day now on your current schedule.
So my current schedule is a lot easier. I am now in our marketing department, and I produce our lifestyle show, which is basically, you know, just like any other show you'd see, but it's more locally focused on different, you know, community players, different organizations, upcoming events. It's kind of like a magazine, but something that you can see.
A visual
magazine.
A visual magazine. As if a magazine is not also visual.
Exactly. I used to describe news producing as like making a collage, but this is kind of like making a magazine.
Yeah.
So I will get up. My shift is, you know, 7 to 4. So it's pretty nice. And day to day, I get up. I put the scripts together for the show. I will then booth it. And then for the rest of the shift, it's pretty abnormal. Usually a news producer, the show will be the end of their shift. Mm-hmm. But mine, it's like near the start of it. So for the rest of the day, I'm prepping for the next day. I'm also prepping for the week ahead, the months ahead. I do a bunch of stuff from, as I said, writing scripts. I edit. I learned to shoot on a camera last year. So now I'm a part-time videographer. For any time we need to do things, I'm also the liaison to our sales team because we have ads on our show. So it's a lot of, you know, jack of all trades, master of none type of deal.
Well, I would say you're also a master of all of those trades.
But I forget how many hours you need to put in to be a master of something, but I'm trying to hit those hours.
Is it 10,000?
I think.
Is that the...
Fact check.
The Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours.
Yeah. That sounds right. So I probably have, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred, but trying to get more. That's my
goal.
There.
Right?
So I'm curious from your perspective, what is something about local television that you think that people might not know but should know?
I think something that I wish that people knew more about local media would be how independent it truly is. I think that people, a lot of the times, they have a very finite idea of what, you know, media is, mm-hmm. which is totally understandable. I'm not going to say that I haven't felt similar feelings before, but something coming into not only studying journalism, but then going into a local stage, I realized how much the things that I learned in school actually applied and people were actually taking care of that. So even in a lifestyle environment, which I'm in, we still have a code of ethics that we, you know, try to abide by. At least I know that I do. And my biggest thing is when I see people, you know, speaking their truth, which is totally, you know, I, once again, not going to say that I don't agree with it at times. Sometimes I just want to be like, but local media, they are actually, they're for the people.
Yeah.
They're putting in the work, and they work so hard, and especially the people behind the scenes. When I first started getting into production, the first thing I said was that, you know, nobody gives flowers to the producers, you know. They see the people on camera, which is once again, is fair. They're the ones that you look to, and they put a lot of work into, but seeing how many people are behind any type of video broadcast and even stuff like the medium of radio, too. There's so many behind-the-scenes players that I would love for them to get more of the spotlight.
Seems like an appropriate time to shout out our executive producer, Chris Pfeiffer, who's in the studio with us and working hard to make us sound pretty. So thank you, Chris.
So much work goes into making people look and sound pretty. It's really crazy.
Absolutely.
I'm known for making so many mistakes.
Well, on the more positive side, do you have a favorite segment that you've ever done?
Yes, I do. I have a lot of favorite segments. I think anytime I get to pick up a camera, I really, really like it. But in terms of doing something in the studio, which is what I do every single day, I try to use a lot of the standard news type of, you know, areas and make it fit for a lifestyle audience. So yeah, yeah. Something, there's an upcoming event, which was the Rutherford B. Hayes Museum. They were having a like midnight candlelight walk around the Halloween time. Ooh. So I was like, this is a crazy idea, but we have the green screen that normally the meteorologists use to show the weather forecast. I said, we can just use that as a green screen. What if I found a dark forest background and you came in and you actually gave us one of your like lamplight stories, and our guest was so down for it. She dressed up like the Grim Reaper.
Oh my
gosh. I went to some dollar store and found a felt campfire, and I got mini flashlights to put under their chins. That was one of my highlights. I also did like a scavenger hunt once in the studio, and I had them move around different parts of our set. So anytime I can take a news station and turn it into my playground, I always feel like that's successful.
I love that.
Yeah, that sounds like a ton of fun.
That's yeah. really cool. I love exercising my free will. That's my favorite thing.
Free will exists. It's crazy.
Exactly. Like, I can turn a green screen into anything I want.
Right.
Yes. Personally, I love watching your trivia segments.
Oh, thank you.
And so those, you're actually featured on screen, and we yeah. get to actually see your face, which is a little bit more uncommon in a production role. Do you ever get recognized, like, as you're out and about in the community? And is that something that you think you were prepared for?
Yes and no. I could probably count on my two hands the amount of times I've been recognized, but I feel like that makes it more special.
Yeah.
I remember one time I was at a Mud Hens game, and I was like taking photos with my friends afterwards, and some like older woman came up and she was like, "Are you from the Nine?" And Aww. She like had such a lovely conversation. She said, "Thank you so much for what you do in the community." So that's really nice.
Yeah.
So that was something that I didn't expect, but was pleasantly surprised. On the other hand, I do have some funny stories about people being a little bit weirder. Like, we got an email where somebody wrote me a creepy poem.
Oh.
That wasn't as fun. But I, once again, I, like, in college, I did improv. So I take things very tongue-in-cheek. So if I sure. think it's funny, I'll laugh at it.
Right.
Like, my HR was like, "Ooh, let's keep this on file." And I was like, "But it's funny." "Oh, it's not? Oh, I guess you're right."
That was probably for me and Libby when we were working at the City Paper. It was one of our favorite things to do, was look through the crazy mail yeah. that we would get
letters
sometimes. The letters to
yeah.
the
Somebody sent us, they sent a bunch of, not every single person in the news station, but they sent a certain number of people, and I was one of them, a letter, like a whole think piece on what we should be doing and what we shouldn't. And I was reading it to everybody like I was giving some sort of like peace to everyone. I was like, "Okay, everyone, listen up."
It opening
was
the scroll.
Exactly, because it was that long.
Oh, wow.
So that's not every time, but, you know, I do like the stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And I want to talk too about your theater segment. So,
yes.
you know, obviously, we'll get to your love of theater and your involvement mm-hmm. in local theater yeah. later, but tell me a little bit about how you started that theater segment for The Nine and why you do it and what you love about it.
Definitely. I think that something that also a lot of people might not know about local media is that there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that have us be like the best adapters. I think that, you know, especially going out of any media field, you should always hire somebody who's worked in either broadcasting or any sort of, you know, media field, because there's so many things that can change. And the reason why I had Curtain Call, which was my segment, was that we were transitioning without me knowing. I didn't know this, of course, because I didn't have the clearance to know, but I didn't know that our show was moving from the news department to the marketing department. Mm. So all I knew was that I lost like a bunch of reporters, because when we were in the news department, every single week we'd have a reporter do a franchise segment. So we had something called Local Love, you know, Express Yourself, and these reporters would be working on things once a week, and I would have all this content. And then about like 3 or 4 months in, they were like, "Oh, this person's not doing their segment anymore. Oh, this person's not doing their segment anymore." And I was like, "Oh, cool." I just had to roll with the punches, because, you know,
yeah.
I have an hour every day that I have to fill. So that, combined with Rebecca Rainier, who is our current host, she really thought that with less people, we want to include more of the behind the scenes, you know, players to have this sort of community family feel. So we kind of talked about, okay, what are things that you enjoy? Because at first I was doing an author segment, because mm-hmm. I really, really liked to read as a kid.
Yeah.
And then Rebecca came in, who is an author. So she kind of took that and she was like, "Well, what do you want to do?" And I said, "Oh, you know, I really like theater. I grew up doing theater ever since I was young. I would really love to highlight local theater." So that was how that kind of came about. And, you know, I used to do it with one of our old photographers. His name is Alex, shout out. But he ended up going and getting a different job. So I was like, "Oh, I'm going to learn how to, you know, shoot on my own camera." So that was, I like that not only am I growing as a storyteller through doing that series, but also I'm growing as like a videographer and just you know, a media person in general.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Yeah. I love that so much. And so I think that's a perfect segue into talking about your current theatrical pursuit.
Yes.
So give a little bit of a background of your involvement in theater, but then also tell me about what you're directing right now, which is the last 5 years with yes. Summerstock Toledo
yeah.
and why you guys chose to do that show.
Definitely. Well, a little bit about my theater background is that when I was younger, my sister did a lot of vocal training and I was a middle child, so obviously I had a copy everything that my siblings did.
Of course.
So I started right. going to different theater classes. I went to a place in Perrysburg called Next Stage Studios, and I took vocal and acting lessons and summer camps. And then from there, I did a lot of school stuff. But when I was in high school, I started doing community theater, which I hadn't done at all. And it was really intimidating, but really exciting, because one of the shows that I did was Summerstock Toledo's Lucky Stiff, which is a really random musical about some British shoe salesman who has to take his dead grandfather on a trip to get some inheritance. It's very Weekend at Bernie's,
yes,
if anybody's
yeah.
familiar. So that was a really cool experience, because Summerstock Toledo was an organization that was built off of all of the students putting on the show. So normally when you're in high school, there's an adult directing it. You bring in a choreographer, another teacher does musical direction. That was all students.
Yeah.
So it was a really cool experience that we got to learn behind the scenes. And I was just a cast member. But then when COVID happened, Summerstock Toledo kind of took a pause. And it wasn't until me and a fellow alumni, Casey Marin, we were on a run of all things, a humid run in Ohio. And
wow.
we were like, we really wanted to do a project in the summer. And she's about to make a move to New York, so we thought, oh, we should really think about what it would mean for us to bring Summerstock Toledo back and to have the same spirit of doing it all ourselves.
Yeah.
So we spoke with our moderator, Matt Krasula, and he said, yeah, you know, if you guys are willing to take this on more than what you did when you were in high school, then you by all means can. And so we collaborated with him, and we picked the last 5 years because it's a very intimate show. It deals a lot with a lot of human emotions, which I really liked as the director. It's my directorial debut.
Yes,
so
queen.
I'm really excited for that. But the story felt very like raw, and we're doing it at the University of Toledo's Black Box Theater, so we wanted it to be kind of more of an intimate show.
Yeah.
We knew that we wanted it to be very small cast in a very small space even before we decided, but we decided to pick that show because mainly there's two cast members and it's a quick 90-minute show, no intermission. So it felt very, like, very close. That's, like,
yeah.
what I would describe it. I'm a very visual person. It just felt, like, very, ooh, close.
Of course.
And I really, really liked that, especially because as somebody who did a lot of speech and debate, performances were very, very close up. You'd be in a classroom and I would do a lot of the acting categories. And so a lot of it would be your facial expressions, you know, and then when I was in college, I did some short film stuff, and that's very close up.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really intrigued by that as a director, like, how can I squeeze out this emotion from these traditional musical theater actors who are kind of used to being on a far stage. So it's been really cool so far.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
well, and so I was gonna say, like, you're working with two people who I absolutely adore,
yes.
Casey Marin and Max Lay, both of whom are very experienced in
absolutely.
The theatrical world. I'm curious from your perspective what it's been like taking on that role. I mean, it's intimidating to take on a director role, but at the same time, directing your friends and trying
yeah.
to make sure that your vision comes to life and, you know, giving notes to your friends
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. So how has that dynamic been for you?
It's been a lot easier than I anticipated. I think that whenever you do something like this, like in big flashing lights, I see don't mix business and pleasure.
Yeah.
And I get really, really nervous. But I think one of the biggest things that I've learned from my work in TV is communication is key
mm-hmm.
in anything, you know, whether it's in work or whether it's in interpersonal, you know, relationships, you always want to communicate. So with Casey, who is not only one of the actresses, but also the co-producer, I kind of brought it up to her, like, hey, if we ever have a disagreement, how should we approach this? And we kind of agreed that if there was ever anything that I felt so strongly about, that I would kind of have the permission to say, hey, I'm extending, like, I'm reaching, this is my, you know, director mallet, I will have, you know, I'll
bring
have my
the
approval.
Gavel. Yeah.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I love deciding that before it comes to that, like, that
mm-hmm.
is probably so helpful.
Definitely. And I talked to my mom and my coworkers, you know, at 13 all about it, because the best thing about working and being around older people is they have so much, like, wisdom
yeah.
of dealing with stuff like this. So even though they might not have directed their own things, they definitely know how to deal with that sort of, like, conflict, especially in a news environment, when not only is there conflict in the stories that you tell, but also, you know, when there's a lot of fiery personalities, you know, and I feel like that's related relative to any type of work environment. But I also really think that Max and Casey did a great job of diving into the material head first. So a lot of what we discussed was heavy character building. Mm-hmm. And because they did so much character building and because I did so much character building, coming into a rehearsal space kind of with your homework already done, when I would say something, they would have that like light bulb moment. Yeah. Where they would realize, oh, I'm picking up what you're putting yeah. down. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like we've all had these experiences being in high school theater when your director says something and you're like, I'm not clicking with that. Yeah. But we really didn't have any of those moments. And if we did, we had a very good dialogue of explaining it. So that is also really easy with only two people. You don't have to explain it to a big group. So the cast size definitely allowed it to be easier. But they're also very professional. You know, we keep it cute and classy because we're friends. But they, at the end of the day, are very professional performers. So I feel like, you know, not anybody can separate that. But we yeah. were all able to because, you know, we knew that there had a job to be done. We had a two-month turnaround, which is incredibly fast.
Absolutely.
So we all kind of had this unspoken understanding of, okay, this is how we're going to act. This is how we're going to behave. This is who we're going to listen to. And let's do it. And it's only been successful, which has been a relief because I know that it could have completely gone the other way and I would have been freaking out.
Yeah, of course.
No, I love that. And I want to switch gears and just quickly touch on improv because yes! you brought that up a lot. And so I want to hear from you, like, how you think the skills that you've taken from doing improv have kind of, like, bled over into the other areas of your life, like directing or like your job on The Nine, and how you kind of use those skills.
Absolutely. I think that if I were to give credit to anything in my life, it is the fact that I did improv for 4 years. That was something that I did kind of on a limb in college. And when I was auditioning, there were different troupes at BG. They do short form and long form. So short form's kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
But I made it on the long form team, which is basically a play without a script. So a lot of what we did was like character building and object work and stuff where you actually had to, not that short form doesn't require your brain, but I'm not as quippy as a short form game can be. But with long form, your cogs in your brain are really turning and you have to look at a scene and say, okay, what am I going to establish? Where's the joke? Oh, there's the joke. How do I build on that? How do I have that reach that apex? How do I wrap it all up at the end? And then also, how do I make this funny? How do I have a funny bit here without taking away from the central plot? So a lot of that really, like, it was like a workout for my brain. Same thing with like studying philosophy. I really like things that engage with how I think. And taking that into the professional world, I think one of the things that frustrated me a lot about a long form scene was that no matter what happened, somebody could walk in. If they say something that changes the plot of the scene, you have to yes and, which is a really big theme in improv, where you just have to accept the reality of what the scene is conveying and go along with it. So in the real world, I applied that. I like to joke around a lot that I'm like, oh, I'm just yes anding, because I think that that is an important skill, because in any situation in life, especially in a high energy and high stress environment like a news station, but also like anything that you experience in your mid-20s, you're going to have things that, you know, don't go according to plan. And you just have to say, yes, and I'm gonna, you know, yes, and I'll do this, or yes, and I can totally pivot this way. So improv not only helped my like cognitive function in a way,
sure,
because I was thinking a lot about things that I would never really normally think about, but it also helped me to be much more adaptable. And I think that anybody who does improv could yeah. agree with the adaptability aspect of it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And I will say improv is the scariest thing in the entire world to me.
Riley, you would be great at it.
Absolutely not. I do not have the quick-witted like creativity for a scene like that. But I will say, I think the one skill that I did glean from any of my improv classes or things that I ever did with improv was the yes and philosophy.
Exactly.
And I
yes.
think I might have taken that a little bit too far, because sometimes I should be saying no to things, mm-hmm. but pretty much anytime something comes across my path, I'm like, oh yes, and what else?
Something else that I also learned as like a, once again, to adapt is sometimes it's not always a yes and, sometimes it's a no, but.
Ooh,
I like
no
that.
But.
Which I'm trying to do that a little bit more, but I totally empathize. And I think that, especially for theater people, like having so much of your life be by a script, it's really yeah. intimidating. And that's what I felt a lot going into improv starting off. But I think you know, take a risk, take a chance, make a change and break away, as Kelly Clarkson would say.
Okay. Period. As you should. We love
Everything I've done in my life has just been because, like, oh, this would be funny or cool. Let's try it.
It's always for the
plot. It's worked out so far.
At the end of the day, everything's for the plot.
Absolutely.
And so, obviously, a lot of this episode of the podcast has been focused on journalism and theater, which are two fields that all three of us here really love and care about.
Yeah.
But I really want to dive a bit deeper into a couple of questions about these two fields. So first with journalism, where do you see the state of our industry right now? And what do you think is currently the most popular medium of journalism?
Oh, I would say that where I see the state of journalism right now is diametrically opposed. And I think that there are two very starkly different camps. And one is definitely focused on the true cost of it in terms of, you know, the cost of knowledge and what it takes to produce that kind of stuff. That's why you see, in my opinion, a lot of people critiquing big media because of stuff like that. But I think that it's like a horseshoe. You have that side of it, but then you have on the opposite side, I feel like we've never had more freedom on the local level and on the personal level, where everybody has, you know, everybody has one of these, a cell phone, everybody has something where they can make their voice heard. And something that a question that was posed in one of my journalism classes was, what makes a journalist? Because now that everybody has their phone, is it, oh, if you take a video of something? And I think that there's something deeper with that. And that does go into kind of the ethics and the true tenets of why you're telling your story and what your purpose is as a journalist. And I do think that now more than ever before, we're seeing everyday people kind of step up to the challenge of that, which I think is quite beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's why I say that it's kind of like two separate things and they are opposed to each other. But I am very optimistic, especially because of how media is growing in the sense of everyday people. I think that one thing that I wish there was more is like regulation in general. I think that there's a lot of crazy things that are always said, whether it's, you know, in the journalism field or just on social media in general. So that is something that I would like to see more tethered. But I do think that having social media as a tool, I would say that that is the most popular form that I'm seeing. I would say that it is both in social videos, but also audio as well. You know, podcasts are booming more than ever before, as we can see, but you know, right? But that, and you know, I get a lot of my news, I'll follow these legacy media companies on TikTok or on YouTube. And I was watching YouTube ever since I was a kid. Like I was watching Kids React, if anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like I would watch that kind of stuff. I would watch like movie clips. But now more than ever, I'm watching think pieces and video essays. And it's definitely really cool. And I think that now more than ever, people are supporting, again, local media. I think that people should realize more that the future of media is at the local level, because I think that as we see all of these streaming platforms and, you know, the fact that I have to pay $10 for Hulu and $11 for Peacock and all of this nonsense, people are going to kind of go back to a updated form of cable where they're going to want to have all of their local stuff all at once, because that's on the ground level. That's what we see every single day. I think that a lot of the times we get worried about the big picture when the big picture starts right in our own backyard.
Yeah.
So that is where I see it heading. And it's also kind of where I hope to see it, because I do think that that is so important, because you can't make a change without starting with yourself, you know?
Absolutely.
You know, man in the mirror, Michael Jackson.
Okay, you're on it with these references. I feel like there's this conversation that people have where they'll make jokes where they'll say, you know, like, oh, I am so gay that I turned straight again. Or like they'll say like, you know, the fashion from the 80s was so bad that it became popular again, or like something like that. You know, I feel like what we're seeing with journalism is kind of that same thing, where it's like it's become so unregulated
that it's gonna then
so focused. Yes, that it's then going to like kind of loop around and bring back the integrity. And
totally.
I think the horseshoe is the perfect way to look at it, because it's, we're starting at a certain point, we're kind of dipping a little bit, and now we're starting to hopefully turn a corner where people are valuing the truth and integrity of journalism more than ever, because we are lacking it more
absolutely
than ever.
I hope that that horseshoe turns into a circle and we just get right back, because if there's one thing we know about history, for better or for worse, it repeats itself. And as much as bad things come around, there is good. And that's like very philosophical of me, but I do think that there's an innate goodness, especially to the field of journalism, that will I think, shine again. It's still there. It's like a little ether, like a phoenix rising from the ashes.
I love the optimism.
I know, right?
You guys are both so
no, literally, like,
it, which,
you have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe in it, but you have to be.
No, right. Absolutely. I agree.
You would just drive yourself crazy if you were an optimist about it if you're in this industry.
No, I truly do feel like we're just craving, like, trustworthy media.
Absolutely.
So that's
and that's why we're going to make it.
Yeah.
Period.
It starts here.
It starts today. Yes. So now the second concept that I want to talk about with you is theater. So obviously it's something that we're both passionate about, but I think we have both seen that it's being attacked right now, similarly to journalism, as a field that is an unnecessary resource, quote unquote, in schools or communities otherwise. And I mean, even Broadway has been making so many different mm-hmm. cash grab choices
yeah.
that are just not really true to that integrity of theater, right? But, you know, here in Northwest Ohio, we have one of the most robust community theater collections of any state or
yeah.
area of the country. So obviously we see its value, right?
Mm-hmm.
But talk to me a little bit about how you think that we can help preserve theatrical arts and the importance of it within our community and at large.
Definitely. I think Toledo is a great example of just having so many different ways to do theater. We have so many different amazing companies and, you know, pushing out, you know, our favorite shows and doing new material as well. I think that that's also important. I think that something about theater and art as a concept is that throughout history, that is what keeps us going. That's how we preserve truth. You know, when there wasn't language, there was art on, you know, on rocks. There were paintings that told stories. And I think that theater is kind of a very modern way to tell things. I remember where I was in high school when Hamilton came out, and it made me want to learn more about the history and, you know, things that I knew and didn't know. So I think that if we use theater as a way to continue telling stories and telling truth, then I think that that's how we keep it alive. And again, the community support, the fact that all of our local theater organizations have such a camaraderie together, and I've experienced that putting on a show. We've had so many people reach out, you know, offering their help and support, and, you know, it takes a village, truly. And I think that that's how we keep theater alive, is, you know, have that village, you know, holding hands and make it unbreakable.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that so much.
Before we get to our Roman empires, tell us your advice for other young professionals.
Definitely. I think my biggest advice is try anything and everything that you're interested in. There is nothing that you can't do within reason. I think that something that led to my success today is the fact that anytime anybody suggested something to me that I, you know, didn't know anything about, if the door was open, I would take a step in and I would look around and say, hey, is this a room I can be in? Sure. And I think that that really is something that holds a lot of people back, as being nervous, being thinking, oh, I might not have the experience to do this, or, you know, oh, what if I'm not good enough? You are only as good as how much effort you put into it. Truly, you know, it's those 10,000 hours. I'm working toward those every day. And I see my life is only at the beginning. Even though I'm 25, I still see that as, like, you know, a baby in mm-hmm. so many aspects. So I think that the biggest thing I would tell young professionals is that there's never a better time to start than now. And anything that you think you can do, try it. And if the path isn't there, make it. There's a phone. You have iMovie. You can do it. That's what I did in high school.
I love it. And now it's time for our Roman empires. Dun, dun, dun. So would our lovely guest like to kick us off today?
Yes, I would say that my Roman empire is the Superman movie.
Girl, yes.
I recently saw it, and I'm not a superhero person. I will have no spoilers. I'm not a big superhero person. I was somebody who admittedly got a lot of Marvel fatigue, because mm-hmm. I'm somebody who I like a complete story, not to say that Marvel didn't. But it's hard when I want to watch other things and I'm like, oh, there's so much other stuff. Like, I was talking to my coworker and there was so much, you know, of the mythos that I had to watch to, you know, to fully engage in Marvel in the way I wanted to. And so I saw Superman. I'm a really big fan of James Gunn.
I was about to say.
From the Scooby-Doo live actions.
Yeah, period.
big
You
fan.
Know when he's attached to a project, it's not going to miss.
His needle drops, like the music that he puts in, are so, so good. So I would say that Superman is my Roman Empire. And it will be for a while. It
Punk
will be.
Rocker? Are you
yes!
kidding me? Like, that
oh,
was so incredible.
Yeah, it was so
I will
good.
Say my one spoiler that's not an actual spoiler is I was reading an interview with James Gunn where he said for test audience, audiences, they took out the scene of Superman saving the squirrel.
I saw the same thing.
And then
thing.
He was so sad, so we put it back in. And I was like, yep. And I mm-hmm. specifically remembered that scene days after.
Yes,
and I texted my mom
so
and I was
Superman.
Like, he saved the squirrel.
Exactly.
I was like, he loves everyone.
Like, yeah. No, it's such a good movie and it makes you feel so punk rock, really.
Yeah, true. And this could seriously, I mean, even with the announcement of Supergirl too, like this could be the resurgence of DC.
Yeah.
Like, especially like you said, with the Marvel fatigue, like there's an opening right now for DC to come in, and James Gunn is the one who could do that. So
yeah. It just made me feel hopeful too. Like I feel yes. like anytime you watch a movie and you're like leaving the theater excited, I'm like, yes.
And anytime I get to see a woman in a superhero movie who is actually like mm-hmm. strong and capable and smart and not
yep.
just the sidekick to the man
exactly.
superhero is beautiful.
It
so.
Was everything hit, and even storytelling wise, stuff that they would bring in the beginning, they'd circle around and come back to it. Storytelling wise, I love when that happens. Nothing was thrown away. So I was like, as an improv person, I was like, oh, the bit came back.
The bit came
I
back.
I see that. Rule of thirds. So
obsessed with you. Okay, Libby, I fear you have another
yes,
one.
It's very
movie
similar.
Like.
F1.
Oh, I haven't also, seen F1.
Oh, you have to watch it. I won't do spoilers then. But also just the soundtrack too. Amazing.
Dude.
So good.
This is really, honestly, you know what? I'm going to forfeit my time today for my Roman Empire and share F1 with you.
Okay,
we're going
to
have
a
joint.
Wow. Can join.
I need to watch it.
I actually do kind of need a preface. The way that, if you remember how Riley and I were with watching Wicked
Dude,
over and over and over in
the
theater.
Same level?
We're not quite the
not
same.
Not quite.
But we have made a couple of trips to the theater.
We saw Wicked, I want to say, 7 times in the theater. We have seen F1 3 times in the theater.
Oh.
So like that, I mean, so we're about, okay. we're like a halfway to our Wicked obsession. However, I don't think I was prepared mm-hmm. for how much I was going to like this movie. You know, like,
yeah, I really went into it. Like, I've yeah. heard some, like, not great things. I was like, okay, it's just a quick watch.
I'm going into it with the, like, what about NASCAR meme in my head, right? Like, I'm like, okay, like, F1, whatever. I seriously watched this movie, and I wanted to abandon my entire life and become a Formula One racer.
Oh, my God.
Like, I was like, I don't care. I'll train. I'll work out every day. Like, I'll do it. Put me in, please. Like, it's so cool. I think Libby and I have talked a lot about, outside of the podcast obviously, that we love that they had this whole storyline about the first female tech director in the Formula
oh,
One
wow.
League, which is really cool. They don't make it a spectacle. They
no,
make it very
there.
Normal that
yeah.
she's there, but then they don't make it invisible either. They touch on
that.
It and have a discussion about it. I think what else is really cool is, like Libby said, the soundtrack. They had Hans Zimmer, who did the for those listening at home and don't
Spirit
know Hans
the Horse
Zimmer,
movie.
Yes, from Spirit the Horse movie, also from Inception,
Parts of the Caribbean,
and also from Pirates of the Caribbean, and also from Interstellar.
So
dude
good.
Has some bangers on bangers, and you know
Big
it's
fan.
The same as like if James Gunn is attached to a project, you
yeah,
know it's gonna
you
be
know
good.
A Hans Zimmer
if Hans
is
Zimmer
great.
Is attached, is gonna be good. What I think is cooler though is the fact that Don Toliver and Doja Cat did the main soundtrack
oh.
song for this movie,
yeah,
but they sampled Hans Zimmer's theme, the F1 theme
Ooh.
That he wrote, and it is literally the only thing I've been listening to. I want to say that I looked at my Apple Music replay and it is already my number one song and I've only been listening to it for like 3
wow.
weeks.
Now, would you rank F1 above or below Herbie Fully Loaded?
Dude, unfortunately,
you're asking the important questions.
Real, you're asking the questions that we're all afraid to.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I have to say higher than Herbie. And I'm really sorry.
Oh my
gosh.
It's
just really good. I mean, they expand on like everyone's story who's in it.
Okay.
Almost.
So I guess I'll watch
like,
it then.
And you know what? Talk about a unique storyline.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we as an audience for the movies have been so prey to all of this repeated, regurgitated,
garbage.
Yeah, you have no idea what's gonna happen. Like,
no. That's exciting.
It's not super predictable, but it is comforting in a way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, you don't feel on edge necessarily, but
you feel excited with them.
I agree.
Intense.
I'm gonna
with
put
them,
it on my letterbox
edge. And the last thing I will say is the director made a huge point to talk about how he wanted to make the audience member feel like they were actually driving an F1 car. And what is really neat is there are several scenes. There's one in particular I'm thinking of, but there's several times where you're sitting there and you, the camera switches so that you literally feel like you are driving the car. It is so cool. Yeah. It is amazing.
I love scenes like that, like the Challengers tennis scene.
Oh, girl.
Don't even get her started.
I was about to say, we need a whole other episode just to discuss
robbed of an Oscar.
Literally robbed. Anyway, before we start yelling on Maine, Sophia, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. You guys are doing great work here.
Oh, thanks. So are you, queen. Yes. I'll see you next Wednesday.
Yes, I'll see you next Wednesday.
And I'll be tuning in.
Yes.
Want to thank Sophia Walter, our guest on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley, and our executive producer is the stupendous Chris Piper.
If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcast.
Bye, besties!
WGTE. Voices around us.